looking for a remote, the remote. Drum roll. Ta-da! Thank you. Yay for technology. How many weren't here last night? Do we have some new people coming in? Came in this morning? If you're confused about the sort of, ask around. You'll find out what that's about. Oh, here we go. Yes. Oh, I know that one too. Yeah. Oh, my. Hey, anybody here worried about global warming? You're praying for it. And Timmins, please come. Well, I've got some good news. There's some news out of Germany that they found a new fuel source for trains. Have you heard about that? Not coconut milk. Kitchen herbs. Kitchen herbs. You believe it? They're using kitchen herbs to run trains. In fact, there's one engineer running his train on time. Okay, that was a little too spicy this morning. Well, gets better. Wait till talent night. Oh. Okay, I'll spare you. It gets better. Well, I want to start by congratulating everybody that was there last night. That was a gutsy breakout session, wasn't it? Awkward, huh? Sorta. Nothing more difficult. Well, might be some things more difficult, but it was pretty awkward talking about shame, isn't it? Actually, it felt shameful, didn't it? For some of us? Yeah. Isn't that the weirdest thing? It's shameful talking about shame. And you know what? It's totally normal. If that's what you felt, you're in good company. We all felt it. Even the group leaders felt it. You know, as together as they may have looked. Yeah, we had a little meeting this morning, and they felt kind of awkward, too. And as much as a part of me wants to apologize for that, I don't want to apologize, because the process or the idea, the goal of that meeting last night that we're going to get into some more is to help us turn into something that we usually run away from. And have you noticed, the more we run away from something, the more power it has on us. You know, a person that is on the run is not free. They're on the run. And so shame, having the power on us that it does, the idea of disarming it and taking back the power we give it requires that we turn into it and become aware of it and feel it. And you felt it last night. That's a good step. Okay? And we're going to pursue that a little bit more, because the idea is stepping into it is to, you know, there's an expression, I love this little expression, to name it is to tame it. We can put a name on it and call it by its name. We're taking back control. We're taking back the power we give it. Okay? Some of you are a little more artistically inclined than others, and if you have drawn something that for you represents shame and would love to share that with others, I think it'd be really cool if you would be willing to hand that in to Wally. And what Wally would then be willing to do is either put them up on a board, or we can show them up on the PowerPoint. Because I think there are some here that are more artistically inclined, and it'd be really fun to see what it is that you came up with, okay, as a drawing. As I managed to mingle around a little bit last night and felt some of the awkwardness and the shame, I heard some really good comments and some even better questions. For instance, where does shame come from? You know, is it from our families, friends, the culture, the society we live in? That's a great question. And that's what we'll be looking at a little bit this morning. In fact, where does the word shame even first appear in the Bible? In Genesis? Anybody know where? Pardon me? In Adam and Eve, yeah. I think it'll be worth are taking a look at it. I've got the passage up here on the screen. So let me read it. In Genesis 2, this is the account of the heavens and the earth when they were created, when the Lord God made the earth and the heavens. Then the Lord God formed a man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living being. Now the Lord God had planted a garden in the east, in Eden, and there he put the man he had formed. And the Lord God made all kinds of trees grow out of the ground, trees that were pleasing to the eye and good for food. In the middle of the garden were the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now the Lord took the man and put him in the garden of Eden to work it and to take care of it. And the Lord commanded the man, "You are free to eat from any tree in the garden, but you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. For when you eat of it, you will certainly die." So the Lord God said, "It is not good for man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him." So the Lord God caused the man to fall into a deep sleep, and while he was sleeping, he took one of the man's ribs and then closed up the place with flesh. Then the Lord God made a woman from the rib he had taken out of the man, and he brought her to the man. And the man said, "Wow, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. And she will be called woman, for she was taken out of man. And that is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh. Adam and his wife were both naked, and they felt no shame." I find it striking that the Spirit would inspire the author here to make that last statement. Naked and no shame. They knew each other perfectly. Not just physically or sexually, but there was nothing to hide about who they were emotionally, in their thoughts, their wishes, their needs, their desires. They knew each other that intimately, that perfectly. Can you imagine that? Being known that way? And knowing somebody else in that same way? Whew. My wife of almost 30 years is the person that comes the closest for me. But I have to admit, there are still parts of me that she doesn't know and parts of her that I still don't know. And I still enjoy getting to know those parts. But we're still kind of checking each other out, even after 30 years, and slowly unwrapping those parts to one another. That's one of the beauties of marriage, as we're a gift to each other that we just get to unwrap more and more and more of and discover more and more of each other. The gift that keeps on giving. But here is a time in history when there was no unwrapping to be done. It was there. You know, nothing to hide, nothing to fear, nothing to lose, nothing to prove. Beautiful, huh? Whew. Imagine being that free, that known, and that loved. And I wish we could say, "And they lived happily ever after." But unfortunately, like any good story, there's a crisis point. A villain comes onto the scene and does something that turns this whole thing around. And again, let's take a look at what happens here. So now the serpent was more crafty than any of the wild animals that the Lord had made. And he said to the woman, "Did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden?" Is that what he said? No, huh? He didn't say don't eat from any tree in the garden. What do you hear the serpent trying to do here? He said, "Don't eat from any tree in the garden." What is he making God out to be? A bad guy. Yeah. He's pretty stingy, isn't he? Yeah. And the woman said to the serpent, "We may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God did say you must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not touch it, or you will die." Interesting. And we just read what God said. Did he say, "Don't touch it"? No. He said, "Don't eat of it." And so already she's focusing on the restrictions of, and adding to the restrictions. Fascinating, yeah, that of the hundreds of trees and species of plants and animals that are there, that God just lavishly put out there, the focus is on the one. The serpent is looking at the one and saying, "Look, there's something here that God is keeping from you. Huh. So you must not eat fruit from," verse 3, "you must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not touch it, or you will die." "You will not certainly die," the serpent said to the woman, For God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Again, what's the idea that he's getting across about God there? Sorry? That he's bad. And if he's holding out on this tree because he doesn't want you to be like him, what does that say about God? Kind of an insecure power monger, huh? He wants to keep this power in his position for himself. He doesn't want you to share in it with him. Look, Adam and Eve, he doesn't seem that good, not trustworthy. So when the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye, and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some of it and ate it. Period. But she doesn't stop there, huh? Interesting. I wonder what was going on in her that caused her to do what she does next. She also gave some to her husband, who was out plowing the fields and had no idea what was going on. No, he was there the whole time, listening into this conversation. And he was the one that God had said, there's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't eat of it. And so Adam steps into the scene and says, wait a minute, honey, what's going on here? This serpent is trying to make you believe something that God didn't say. Do we see that here? No. Adam is totally quiet, sits by and watches this conversation going on, doesn't say a thing. And his wife finally turns to him and says, here, you take some. Oh, okay. An innocent bystander. And then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they realized they were naked. So they sewed fig leaves together and made coverings for themselves. I'd love to hear what any reactions, you know, what stands out to you as you listen to this morning? Any comments or observations or questions come to mind? Nothing yet?
Why are they covering up at the end?
Why are they covering up at the end? And you know, the English version doesn't make it very clear, but in the Hebrew, the idea of loincloth is something that covers their genitals. Why cover their genitals? What's the point there? Imagine you come home from school and you're hungry. You open the door and you see a bowl of fruit on the table and you come to grab, I don't know, let's call it an apple. You come to grab an apple and your mother comes and says, no, don't touch that. We're going to have supper in 5 minutes. I just need to go to the store and get some milk. I'll be right back. So you hear your mom go out, and the car's got a muffler problem. You hear the car, and you figure, look, 5 minutes, an apple, no sweat. I could down an apple in no time. So you take a bite, two bites, and then car's back already. You look at the table. Uh-oh, mom forgot her purse. And you hear the footsteps coming into the house. What do? What do you hide? You hide the apple. Yeah, of course you hide the apple. There's a pot of flowers. We'll just stick it in there. But they hide what? Do they hide the fruit they just ate? No. They hide their genitals. What's the deal? Why the genitals? Kind of strange, huh? So they hide. And not only do they hide their genitals, but look what happens next. Then the man and his wife heard the sound of the Lord God as he was walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and then they hid from the Lord among the trees in the garden. So it wasn't just enough to hide their genitals. They themselves hid in the trees. But the Lord God called to man, where are you? He answered, well, I heard you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked. So I hid. And he said, now who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree that I commanded you not to eat from? We'll stop there for now. Any other observations, reactions that you have this morning as you hear this? Yeah. So, did everybody hear? Can you say it a little louder, please?
God had already known that.
Known.
That they did
what they did.
He was trying to get them to explain themselves.
So God knows. God being God, omniscient is the word theologians use. He knows all things. He knows what happened. He knows where they are. And he's asking them these questions. Why would God ask these questions? Interesting, huh? And so the comment over here is that maybe he's inviting them to fess up or admit to it. Yeah?
Another thing is that it shows how much shame they have, that the fact that they're hiding themselves, like naked, from the person who created them that way.
Yeah.
It shows how much shame is in the body.
Yeah. Did you hear that? You got some great comments, so speak up because I want everybody to be able to benefit from them. So the point here is that you could see the shame. It's almost palpable, huh? They're hiding. That's kind of one of the things we saw last night. There's nothing like shame to make us want to retreat and hide, isolate ourselves. So they hide. Anything else? Any other comments, observations? Questions? Good thoughts. Let's look at what are the consequences that you see. So here we see hiding. What else comes up as you see consequences for taking the fruit and saying to God, you know what? We're not sure we can really trust you. We're going to take our life into our own hands and do what we want to do, regardless of what you said. What are some of the consequences you see here of doing that? So they become uncomfortable with themselves. An awkwardness there, huh? Kind of the similar awkwardness we felt last night. Not too sure. Is this a safe place? Can we come up from hiding and be real with one another? Yeah.
See fear? Are they afraid?
So you see fear. What do you see fear,
Pat? I said they were afraid, and so they hid.
Yeah.
So all the fear and not knowing how God was going to react to this.
Yeah. Do you remember what God had said about the consequence of doing that? That if you eat of it, yeah, verse 4, yeah, where are we here? 17, for when you eat of it, you will certainly die. Interesting that they didn't physically die here. But what happened was spiritual death. Not a bios death, but a zeos death. There was separation. There's nothing like shame to create separation. And that's what happened. In turning our backs from God, there's nothing like shame to come in to be an intimacy stopper or a blocker. And in sin, there is separation. So, fear, hiding, anything else you see? Yeah?
It's obviously going to affect the way that they think of each other. Like, as a married couple, the fact that they know what they look like in that situation, they're both going to be not just ashamed of themselves, but who they're with.
Interesting. So ashamed of themselves and ashamed of the other. Why would they be ashamed of the other, you think?
They know that you were both in the same. If you're ashamed of yourself, you're obviously going to be ashamed of the same person that was in the exact same.
In the same situation you were in.
Yeah.
Interesting observation. Yeah.
Just going along with this, say they're lost of innocence.
What comes with the loss of innocence?
Beginning of sin.
Beginning of sin? Yeah.
Guilt.
Guilt.
Shame.
Yeah. Interesting, yeah, the knowledge of good and evil. That knowledge, the word knowledge is not just head knowledge, but it's experience of it. You now know evil and good. Before, that was just a theory, just an idea for them. The new good in relationship with God, but now evil. They can experience it. They feel the fear. They feel the shame. Yeah. Anything else?
Sorry. It shows that, like, when it first started, you know, like they were so ashamed of what they did and they didn't want to face God. But then you look at nowadays, there's people doing that like regularly all the time. They have absolutely no shame of not, they're even proud of what they're doing.
Boasting about it. Yeah. Yeah. Boy, it's come a long way, haven't we? Whew. Domino effect, huh? It just gets worse and worse, it seems. Yeah. Anything from here? Observations? Questions? Reactions? Well, let's just maybe summarize some of these things that we just put words to. So we mentioned their eyes were opened. They became aware of being naked and ashamed. And they hid themselves from each other and from God. This is something I made reference to. I find it fascinating that Eve would feel the need to turn to Adam and say, "Here, honey, join me." And Adam, "Yes, honey." And he does. Yeah. And as I read into this, you know, that's what I love about reading the Bible. I just don't read it from a distance. I love getting into the story and putting myself in the story itself. And I put myself in Adam's place or in Eve's place. And having turned from God, there's an experience of an emptiness there that was never there before. There was a fullness that was there that I wouldn't have been aware of until I lost it. It's like health, huh? Have you ever been injured? There's nothing like being sick or being injured to help you appreciate what health is like. Yeah. And here they were full and yet lost that fullness in being in relationship with God. So they now start turning to each other. "I need you in ways I've never needed you before to compensate for this void in my life, this emptiness." So they turn to each other to compensate for that God-shaped void. So we talked about fear. And one of the things I see them afraid of, that we've been afraid of ever since, "Will I be enough to get you to cooperate in giving me what I need from you to make me feel whole, full, and happy? Will I be enough? Will I be good enough? Will I be good looking enough? Will I be smart enough? Will I be sexy enough? Cool enough? Intelligent enough?" I think, yeah, we can put all kinds of words there. "Will I be enough to get you to give me what I think you have that I need to feel whole and full and alive?" Whew, a lot of pressure there, huh? And then when you do get somebody to actually give you a taste of love, can you finally say, "Ah, it's done. I can give up"? No. Got to keep going. Huh? You got to keep putting out, being nice, whatever it is you've been doing to get what it is you got. There's no rest there. So there's a terror. Will I be enough? Will I succeed in hiding or in diverting your eyes from seeing parts of me that would cause you to reject me? And that's what I get when I see them hiding themselves under, you know, with the loincloths of fig leaves. I feel bad. It's not I feel guilty, you know, for turning my back on God. It's I'm bad. Remember, that's what we talked about last night. A big difference between feeling guilty and ashamed. It's not, "Oh my goodness, I just, look what I did to God. Look what I did to my spouse." It's, "I'm ashamed. I'm going to hide." And so fig leaves. What are the purposes of fig leaves, you think? So one was to hide, yeah? And the other one was to divert their eyes. I don't want you to see what I feel so bad about, what I think is so wrong and bad about me. I want you to not see that, and I want to turn your eyes away to something that might draw your attention and your affection and your approval of me. So two things, huh? To hide and divert. Fig leaves. Have you noticed how that concept of fig leaves is very much present with us today? What are some of the fig leaves that we use today to hide behind and to draw people's attention connection with? What comes to mind? Clothes? Money? Cars? Not just car, but cars. How many cars do we need? Yeah. Sorry? Drugs? Alcohol? And what was last? To hide behind? Well, Facebook. Oh, boy. Yeah. I was with some university students a couple of weeks ago, and I just happened to mention, in what way is social media a fig leaf? And they just, oh, my goodness. Yeah, no kidding. Facebook is the perfect fig leaf. You can craft a fig leaf to put out there what you want people to see and make sure they don't see what you don't want them to see. It's the perfect fig leaf in some ways, huh? So if this was a modern day version, it would be, and they hid behind Facebook, you know? Different kind of page, different leaf. Yep. So Facebook, yeah. Anything else? Mm-hmm. Relationships? How so? And I missed the first part with a little bit of noise back here. There's a humming. The relationships, and as you started to unpack that, it was the idea of appearing to be happy when maybe you're not. Kind of like my story last night. I went, my coach crossed me, and we crossed paths in the hallway. Ron, are you happy? Oh, I thought I was putting on the image that I was happy, but he saw through that. With that one question, I felt naked. A see-through fig leaf. Ooh, bad deal. What do I need to do to cover up? Yeah. What was that, Wally?
Like a white bathing suit.
A white bathing, yeah. Sheesh. Yeah. Like relationships? So relationships there. Again, the whole idea of relationships. Yeah. Okay. And you heard some of mine last night, huh? When I told you my story. The sense of shame that I felt growing up with the neglect, with the desire to want to be seen and affirmed and valued wasn't there. So I became very uncomfortable with my needs and covered up by being a nice guy, class clown, the jock. Purpose of fig leaves. Things we do. Who said that? Go ahead. Can you type that for us?
Trying to make yourself look good by doing a whole lot of things.
Huh.
Our own efforts.
Yeah. Like what? What would be one for yourself, for instance? Put you on the spot. Very much. Yeah, well said.
I think probably the quickest one is just the smile, right? People put on a smile, and it's the quickest fig leaf you have available.
Hey, how are you? Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Yeah. Great thoughts. So, purpose of fig leaves? To divert attention toward parts of me that might win your approval and cooperation in giving me what I believe you have, that I need to feel alive, whole, full, happy, and to draw your attention away from me. Certain parts of me that I feel ashamed of, that if you saw, you would want to get as far away from me as you could. So here we see that man and woman, ever since the fall, driven by two needs, the need to avoid pain, a sense of separation, rejection. If you really saw who I was, you'd want to abandon me. And yet, the desire to be happy, to be fulfilled, to compensate for an emptiness that's there, ever since we've turned our back on God. Now, I'm visual, And I love images, and so one of the images that comes to mind as I think of this is this image here. Imagine this heart represented here as Adam and Eve naked, and these lines representing the parts of us that we're now ashamed of, the deep longings in the, of the heart for love, affection, to be known, to matter, to feel secure, respected. Have you ever noticed the more you're in touch with those longings, the more being disappointed hurts? Have you ever felt that? If you noticed my story last night, you know, when it was my birthday, you know, my fourth birthday, and there was no celebration, I wanted to hide those desires. I wanted to bury them. There's something wrong with them. If I could only get rid of them, I wouldn't feel the pain of this disappointment right now. And you see, Adam and Eve, you know, to settle on taking a fruit, they had to somehow do something with the very desires God put in there for him. They did this with those desires and settled on a fruit. We're going to worship this fruit in some ways. We're going to become ourselves God. We're going to replace God and become our own self-made God. And so these lines represent the numbing of desires that are good desires. And then the fig leaf. But you notice how fig leaves tend to take on a life of their own? We want to hide the whole part of ourselves that we feel ashamed of and awkward about. And soon enough, those fig leaves, you know, be it relationships, the things that we do, the pleasures, the pursuits, the projects, the people we look to hide from, they end up taking on a whole life of their own. And the very walls that we seek to hide behind, the fortress walls that we take refuge behind, end up becoming prison walls. Start choking and confining us, making us smaller. And you felt a little bit about that last night. You weren't all that free about just being open about what you thought, what you experienced, and what you could have said, you know, in response to the questions. There's something a little bit confining, huh? About the fig leaves that we wear. They kind of start making us feel a little bit tight inside. And these arrows represent love. The love that we have to give and the love we want to receive. Something gets in the way of our being able to give love and receive love. And it's that wall. It's those fig leaves. They get in the way. You know, the class clown. Does the class clown feel loved? Oh, he might feel popular for a time. Noticed. But something of that fig leaf keeps the class clown from being feeling known, meant, and wanted for who he is. Wanted for the laughs I can generate, but for who I really am? Not really. And imagine now two people coming together and wanting a relationship with each other. And you sense what happens? If those fig leaves are in the way, and they want to love and be loved, there's going to be some friction there, huh? Those fig leaves are getting in the way of truly getting to know one another and being known. And there's going to be friction, there's going to be conflict, there's going to be pain. These lightning bolts represent something of that friction and that pain. And the more we feel that pain and that disappointment, it fuels all the more the desire to want to do this. If I can only get rid of my desires for love, I'll feel less pain. And if I can hide behind the fig leaves, keeping safe, I won't feel so much pain. And on it goes. The cycle goes. I work with many, many couples over the last 20 years or so, and this is exactly what gets played out. Two people trying to make a go of it, and yet having a hard time really meeting one another because of these fig leaves that are in the way. The conflicts I have with my wife boil down to this very concept. Yeah? The fig leaves that get in the way of our really meeting each other and getting to know one another. Reactions, comments, questions?
see, I'm just looking at relationships now compared to relationships from 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Do you see more fig leaves out there than they used to be?
I see more varieties, perhaps, of fig leaves. But I think the fig leaves have always been there, ever since the fall. And technology has provided us a few more options. But we'll find them wherever. You know, you can go into the deep, dark Africa. I've been to Ivory Coast. I've been to I've been to Haiti. And I could tell you a story from Haiti where the fig leaves were, as much as they don't have much in terms of prosperity and money, the fig leaves are very much in place. I say, because of the fear. The fear is still within us. We're made to be known and met, and yet we're so terrified of, if I really let you in, would you really love me? I'm not sure. What do I need to do to compensate then? Yeah, great question. Any other thoughts or questions before we head into breakout groups this morning? Joe.
As you were talking here, the thing that just really hit me is that that's what it is with us with God, is where we built up that wall. God doesn't have a wall. He wants to come in. And yet we put that big wall around us to let God have that relationship with us.
We'll give you this, God. The part of us that looks good. I'm not sure I want to give you this part, though. And we'll get into a little bit more of that this afternoon. Yeah. Good segue, Joe. Anything else? We're going to head off into breakout groups this morning, and I've got some more gutsy questions for you. I know last night was difficult, and the questions I have for you this morning are going to be kind of similar, okay, because I want you to grapple with this, because I don't want you to just go away with some head knowledge. This has had a major impact on my life to the degree that I allowed it to become real for me and started to recognize how this was real for me. And so I really want to encourage you to grapple with this yourself. And you could grapple with the questions, but if you don't feel free opening up in your breakout groups, don't feel any pressure to do so. But just go along with the experience. Listen, be attentive to what's going on in yourself and in others, and you'll see that this isn't the end of the story. Okay, and the idea, as I mentioned earlier, is to learn to not just keep running away from shame, but to turn into it, to give it a name, to start to take power away from it as you step into it. All right? So, Wally, I know that some new people here this morning. Do you want to explain what how this works?
I heard comments that people would like to stay in some
of the groups that we're, because they're starting to have a bit of a group dynamic, so okay. Maybe if we just have those who are new raise their hands and we can distribute them.
Okay, who's new here? Number one. Anybody else new here?
I saw a few more hands earlier. Ah, here we go.
So there's number two, there's number three. Is there a number four? Okay. Just for you who are new here, that's number one. Group over there. Number two.
Okay, we have a number four over here.
Well, sort of number five, but we're here for the breakout rooms.
Okay.
Here, number four. Oh, yeah. You weren't here. You didn't put your hand up. Okay, you're number four, you're number one.
Number four.
Huh?